Ben Health got reel 5. Ben, you were telling me on the last reel how you were now looking for your father after the ghetto had for the most part been liquidated, and you had just left the park where the Polish woman and her son weren't sure whether they recognised you or not, but you managed to get out of that situation.
It was now getting dark, so I decided to return to the Pole, who I first met earlier, and when I got there he was waiting for me, and then we went to meet my parents. I don't know exactly where the place was because it was very dark, but we got there, and then I met my father, my mother and my aunt. Well, it was, for me, it was, at this particular moment, it was as if life has returned again, because I, as much as I wanted to believe that they were alive, as long as I didn't see them, I was never too certain about it. Now I saw them, my mother got hold of me, she kissed me and she cuddled me, and it was really a most wonderful reunion. My father decided that it is time that he comes out with me, comes with me and goes back to the small ghetto. Now the problem was how to get in, because in order to get into the small ghetto, one had to go through the main gate, because all around there were guards and it was impossible really to get through other than through the main gates. But there was an additional problem, because every time a group used to go out to work, the group was counted. So if that group was coming back, the same number had to come back. Now, when I went out with the group that I was working. So I was coming back, with the same group, so the number was complete. But how my father was going to come in, that was really a problem. Well, we decided that we'll take a chance, because it was something that people were doing in order to get in. What used to happen is when they counted us, first of all, we went up to the glass factory, outside the glass factory where we used to concentrate before we used to leave for the ghetto. They counted us up there, which was okay, because my father then joined us. And then when we got back towards the ghetto, it was a question of, as they were counting, to try and move in with the group. And that, of course, had to be done with the cooperation of the people who were in that group. And of course, this is something that we all tried to do. It was very dangerous, because we could have all collectively been killed if suddenly we'd found out that there was a kind of collusion going on between us. Anyway, we managed to get through, and my father was now with me in the small ghetto. It was very late when we arrived, and we went straight to see my uncle, my father's brother. Now, when I knocked at the door, my uncle was asleep, and he woke up and he saw us, the two of us. He got very annoyed with me, because first of all, he told me, why didn't you discuss it with me? Because while I was out in the afternoon, many shootings going on. A number of Jewish policemen were killed because they tried to save some of their family their parents. See, what happened after the deportation, there were quite a number of people who went into hiding. They were either hiding outside the ghetto with non-Jewish, with Poles, or they were hiding in what used to be the old ghetto. And now they were coming out and they were trying to get back into the small ghetto. The Germans, of course, realized this and they heard about it, because to start off with, they were rounding up people who were in hiding, and soon after the deportation, they collected them, they puts them in the synagogue, as I explained earlier. It was sort of a staging post where sort of a lot of people used to go through. And then they send them to the next town where the deportation was taking place. So that was one whole group. When they were collected, they were sent off, and they finished up in the end in the gas chamber, because that next town, the next town was earmarked also to be sent to the gas chambers. Now, but of course, they didn't find everybody. They kept on searching, and there were still people who managed to evade them. But and slowly, they were infiltrating into the ghetto. And when they were in the ghetto, once again, the Germans had their own collaborators who used to tell them what was going on, and the Germans would swoop down upon the place, and then they would discover that there were people in hiding. And of course, that was in order to show example that what they can do, they immediately were shooting. Now, this particular afternoon, there seemed to have been a lot more activity than usual. A number of the Jewish police were killed because of the fact that they tried to save family. And a number of people who were caught trying to get in were also shot. And whilst all this was happening, here was I coming in with my father. Now, I didn't really care very much about it. I was so happy that I was with my father. I was very fond of both my father and my mother, but I always had a sort of great admiration for my father, the way he used to conduct himself and the way with his courage and the way he simply did not accept defeatism at any time, and he was always a man of hope and a man of action. And that appealed to me always greatly, and I was very happy to be with him. To be with him was always to me a great adventure, because I knew that he was always capable to do so much. So I really didn't take any notice of what my uncle told me, and I simply said, well, I thought this time that I find out where he is and so on. Anyway, we went to sleep. There wasn't much room. We slept on the floor. There was just the bare floor. And in the morning, my father went out together with the group where my uncles were working, together with another 50 other people. One of my uncles was in charge of that group. And my uncle managed to put my father's name down as if that he was there from the very beginning, during the deportation, that he was part of that group. It wasn't difficult for my father to do it, because the man in charge of that whole place was a Pole, and he used to be a director of the mill that belonged to my uncles, and at one time used to be also a partner of my father. So they were great friends, and this Pole helped to make sure that my father was legalized, because it was a question of legality. Because to the Germans, those who were working at the time of the deportation, they were the people who had a right to stay in their eyes, and they were legal. Anybody else was illegal, and as such, there was no room for that person. Well, so once my father became legalized, he came back, and slowly things settled down. But as far as it settled down in so far, that as far as I was concerned, that I was with my father. But at this particular time, the atrocities that were taking place were simply unspeakable. There wasn't a day going by without shootings. There wasn't a day going by without people being beaten to death, people being severely mauled. It was a time that probably was one of the worst times. In a certain sense, there were so many difficult times. But this was a time when one's life really was in jeopardy from minute to minute. One never knew what the next thing was going to happen. And the Gestapo, as well as those who were working with them, and they had with them at the time still the Latvians and the Ukrainians, they were all trigger happy, and for the flimsiest excuse, they used to kill people. So we lived in utter fright, and for any minute to be killed. Now, at the same time, whilst all this was happening, my father was. He got in touch, or rather, one of the Poles where my younger sister, who was at that time, I think by that time she was, at least 3 years, about 8 years old, she was with them in the village. The man got in touch with them and said, "Look, I have to bring back your child because I have problems in the village. All the villagers are pointing at me, and they are asking me, who is this child? And they are asking me, how much money did I get? And they want a share of the money that I got. And I feel if I don't bring the child back to you, not only will you not have a child, but my life will also be destroyed." Well, of course, my father said, "Bring it back." Now, the tragedy about this, and this is where I have, so to speak, my difference or my quarrel with the Poles. You see, I have earlier mentioned that I understand very well why the Poles could not hide Jews, because their own life was at risk. And I don't know, nobody knows, how one would react if one's life is in danger. Whether I would be capable of hiding somebody when my own life is in danger. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. So therefore, I cannot really judge, and I would not judge. But you see, if you take the case of my younger sister, a child of 8, to the Germans, the image of a Jew was always one who had a crooked nose and black hair, a long nose. And somebody who was blonde was automatically an Aryan in their eyes. Now, it so happens that we were all blonde. I was blonde as a child. I had a very short nose. I mean, very much of an Aryan nose. My little sister had blonde hair, and she had a short nose, small nose. And in no way would the Germans ever know any difference. If they would have come into the village, would have searched, they would have never picked on the child. Now, when they took the child home, they treated the child as their own. They fed it with one of their relatives. But you see, in a small village, everybody knows everybody, and they sort of thought, "Well, this is not your child." But you see, they were taking. They were all the villagers were all God fearing. They all went every Sunday to church. Now they took my sister to church, and within a very short time, my sister really became like a child would, like a Christian child. She was saying her prayers, and she was behaving exactly like a Christian child, and she could have lived through right to the end of the war, completely unharmed, and she would have been alive today. Were it not for the fact that the people around simply would not have it. And this Paul, who was a very decent man, I remember him very well, and he was a very, he used to work before the war for my father, and he came to our home many times during the war. He really was crying. He said, "I'm awfully sorry, but what else can I do? There is no way that I can save the child." Anyway, so my father decided that this is the only way, and he managed to smuggle her back. She was with us. At the same time, everything was really happening together. It's amazing how these things happen. My mother was experiencing problems in hiding, because what happened? Every week, the Poles who were hiding her were asking her for more money, with the excuse that somebody has found out that they are hiding them, and the only way that they can hide them is if they keep on paying them off. Now, my mother and my aunt, both of them, realized that sooner or later, they're going to finish completely moneyless. So they told them, very sorry, but we've given you everything. So one day the door opened and two Polish secret police came in and they said, we are from the secret police and we're going to take you away. But we will leave you if you will give us all your valuables and everything else that you have on you. Well, my mother gave them, my aunt gave them what they had, and that was not enough. They undressed them, searched them, and took everything else that they had on them. And then they turned around to them and said, if you do not leave this place tonight and you come back tomorrow, we will take you to the Gestapo and your life will be finished. So my mother immediately contacted my father. At that stage, where my father was working was not all that far away where she was in hiding. And again, the two of them came into the small ghetto. They managed to smuggle them back into the ghetto. So we were now back together. It was my father, my mother, my younger sister, and I. About the same time, another tragedy was taking place. My sister was the middle one. She was a year younger than I. She was in hiding in another place, in another town, together with a cousin who was about 6 months younger than her. And then my father, suddenly we get a letter saying that my cousin is no longer together with my sister. So my aunt and uncle, she was the only daughter, got very worried about it. And then they sent a letter to find out what happened. And the Pole came and he told them that he took my cousin to another Pole to get some things, because she wanted some things from this Pole. And he waited and waited for her, but she never came back. So he thought maybe she decided to stay. They didn't even want to go in there. So he went back and that was it. So when my aunt and uncle inquired from the other posts who they were their friends and with whom they left quite a lot of their valuables and possessions, he told them, yes, your daughter, your child came to us. We gave her a few things that she wanted. She went out. We saw a man together with her. And that's all we know. Well, when we heard about what has happened, my parents decided, well, we better do something about it and bring back my sister. So my sister came back, and now we were all five together in the camp, in the ghetto. And then when they asked what happened to my cousin, well, my sister said, well, all she knows is that she went out to the that she went out with this Pole and she never came back, and that is as much as she knows. Well, it was a terrible tragedy because there was no way that one could find out what happened, and until today. My aunt, who has survived the camps, she has never got over it. She has been a broken person, and more so because of this sort of complete uncertainty. If the child would have been killed, or if the child would have been taken away, whatever, she would have known that that is how it happened. But the circumstances in which it happened have generated a kind of bitterness in my aunt that has never left her. And after the war, she was still in her 30s when she was liberated. She never wanted any children, because what happened, she remarried. Well, I will have to carry on with this because my aunt, my uncle, because it's I will come to that, what happened to her. I will leave it at that stage because there is a continuation of unfortunately, a very sad, another great tragedy happened there. This all was part of the as a result of this of what happened to my cousin. But anyway, now we were all back. Well, the conditions under which we lived were really atrocious, because we lived in one room, about two or three families. We managed. The important thing is that we were together as a family, and it was very rare. There were not many families that were left, because when we came back after the deportation, there were whole families that were completely wiped out. And those who were left in the main would be one member of a family, or two brothers would be left, but the parents would be sent away, or the husband was left and the wife was sent away with the children. So in the main, there were mainly men, very few women, and even fewer children. It was really, the families were dismembered. Now, we were, of course, not the only ones. And it so happens that after a time, and I'm only talking here of a period of about 2 months, but these 2 months sort of loom larger than most others, because they seem like eternity, really. Because so much has been was happening during these 2 months, of the time, the way people were picked up, the way they were taken away and they were sent away, killed, and so on. Now, the Germans knew about it now, that there were quite a few hundred people who have saved themselves. And they turned around and said, right, we have decided that everybody who now lives in this small ghetto, it's going to be legalized, and they all are going to receive rations like everybody else. But we also want the names, like all the other names, because they had the names of all the people who were officially left. We want their names as well. So there was this announcement that you are like an amnesty. Their death sentence was suspended, and from now on they're going to get the rations. So everybody's name was registered, and no sooner were the names registered, within a matter of a week or two, there came an order that all these people who have registered recently have to be rounded up, and they're going to be sent away to a different place. Well, even if one's name is not on the list, the very fact that one was not there at the time, one feels automatically guilty. And it so happens that my mother's name, we didn't know this, but my mother's name and my two sisters' name did not come on the list, because the secretary of the Jewish committee was an accountant by profession, and he used to be before the war an accountant for us as well as for my uncles. And so he never put the name down. But since they were looking for people who were illegal, of course my mother immediately felt that she would be, she's on the list as well. So she went into hiding, and together with another few people. And one morning, you see, they used such means to get out, to get people to talk, that I mean, at the time it seemed that the people, whatever somebody did, seemed like they were guilty of doing it. But looking back in perspective, maybe one cannot accuse them so much, because what happened was, they used to get, if they found one individual, they used to say to him, look, if you tell us where we can find people who are in hiding, we would then let you out free. And they caught somebody whose aunt was together with my mother and with a few other people. And when they asked him, and of course they beat him up as well, he knew where his aunt went to hide, so he told them that was the hiding place. So it so happens they never released the men. But they came, and they it was early morning, and my father was already gone to work. I happened to be back from, I was working on night shift that night. That everything to me happened with the night shift. It's such a strange coincidence that throughout the time when I was working in the glass factory, all the things that were happening used to happen when they were the glass, when it used to happen just around either during the night shift or just afterwards, early morning. Now, I came back very early in the morning from work, and I was very tired. I went straight to bed, and I wasn't aware of what was happening. By about 9 o'clock, somebody came to wake me up, and he says, "Get up quickly, because they've just taken your mother away and your sister." So what happened? They took everybody away, and my sister, middle sister, she when she woke up, she somehow had a, when they told her to get dressed, she said she can't get dressed because she's feeling sick. And one of the policemen who was in charge of it looked at her and he said, "Okay, she's such a lovely girl, we'll leave her." And they left my sister behind and they took everybody else, including my youngest sister. Now, when I heard about it, I immediately ran to the place where they were collecting them. It was they were all in a basement, all crowded. And I went down, and I went. You couldn't get there because, of course, they were all guarded. But there was a little window, and I remember how I was screaming and calling Mama, you know. And I could hear my mother's voice, but I didn't see her. That's the last I've ever heard, you know. That was the voice from that. I didn't see her anymore after that. And a few years ago, when I went to Poland with a group of people who wanted to learn something about what happened in Poland, and I went with them, and we went to my hometown. I took them along the route, showing them everything what was happening, and they observed it. I only realized it afterwards that when we got to that place, they see all the houses, all the buildings are still there. Everything is exactly like it hasn't changed, except that it looks that much older, 40 years older. As I was explaining to them, about I was showing them the action in exactly the same way as I did at the time, and they sort of looked and they stood there, sort of they just couldn't get over it, that how I was completely reliving it, you know, just as I sort of looked down and asked, I didn't see them, I could see my mother, I could see the people down there and the noises and just my mother's voice, you know. And it was only when I got up, I sort of from the crouching position, because I had to bend down because it was low in the basement. When I suddenly got up, when suddenly they pointed it out to me, you know, what you've just done, you've just relived it.